Hello, and welcome to my Haven of Bliss podcast, havenofbliss.com. I'm my Wyatt or Tracy? I'm Wyatt, and this is...
Tracy.
Hi, Tracy. So today, we got a little rundown for you. We're going to talk about evolution first, and then we're going to talk about this article I saw on Dig. Then we're going to talk about the Pentecostal church. And then we're going to wrap it up with X-Men 3, which we saw. I just want to talk about that, too.
The final destination.
Yeah. So, let's go. You can fast forward if you want. But. So, Tracy's inspired because she's been listening to evolutionary podcasts. And I think we're going to talk about evolution, and Tracy's slightly qualified to talk about this for certain reasons, academic. Don't you think so?
Yes.
What did you study in school?
Just 1 second here.
All right.
Sorry.
She's eating popcorn. She has to wash it down.
Thank you. I studied chemical and biological engineering with an emphasis on biotechnology.
Okay. That was over my head.
Did I say it too fast? I studied evolutionary biology in college, too.
Yeah. So let's do a little rundown of the evolutionary argument. Do we believe in evolution?
Do I believe in evolution?
Yes.
I haven't decided yet. Not, I don't believe in the evolution that is taught in schools.
Okay, I'll sum it up a little bit. Okay.
That's why I didn't want to talk about this.
People use evolution as a scientific basis of debunking creationism. And the main reason that we have problems with evolution is because people say that the world created itself rather than God created it. So the whole premise is not that God created the world, but the world is autonomous and self-sovereigning, or whatever, such that it's controlling itself and it had arranged itself out of nothing on its own without the help of God.
Yeah, I don't believe
and
in
therefore
that kind
God
of evolution.
Is not in control. That's the problem with evolution, because it's to say that there is no God, and we do not believe that.
No, I don't believe that. But...
You liked Philip Johnson, but what?
I know, I don't want to talk about Philip Johnson, though, because he's a little bit outdated.
Okay.
That's my whole problem right now, is because I feel like the intelligent design movement is based on a lot of outdated facts, and they need to get up to date. So that's what I'm trying to do right now, is get more up-to-date information.
What is intelligent design?
It's that the, everything on Earth is... made by a creator, and that there's something moving, there's something behind all the different adaptations and changes and species, not change from species to species, but changes within species. Like when...
They're saying things are...
They're just saying that...
They're irreducibly complex. That they're too complex that they could have arranged from lesser units, such that even though there's a path that you can line... items up, it's not necessarily that one came from each other.
Right.
And then also that there's too large of a jump and too much deviation between them that they are necessarily related to each other at all, even though they're similar. And just because they're similar and unique doesn't mean that they were. So therefore, they are obviously created and put in order by something more intelligent. Just like to say, a computer cannot come about by itself. Unless a higher intelligent forms the silicon in a way that it's the right pattern so that energy can go through and it can become a computer. Because a computer just doesn't suddenly appear. Same thing with a Corvette or any other complex machine. Life is even far more complex than that. How can it just appear on its own? It's not logical. Anyways.
Right.
So, Tracy was listening to some evolutionary podcasts.
Evolution podcast one. Evolution 101. I don't know if I should promote it. It's not too bad. It's on... where is it on? It's on learningoutloud.com under the science section. Yeah. And also on rationalthinking.com or some... I don't remember. Some other website. But it's a pretty popular evolutionary podcast that explains the basics of evolution.
In the Bible, there's different debates about how creation happened. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And some people allege that there are two creation accounts in Genesis. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, just because it's like Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 3 differ a little bit on how the order of things happen. Like, were the trees there before or after man? And it's like the language as it's converted into English makes it a little ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
So the people think that they're actually written by two authors. You see, there's the Torah or the Pentateuch, right? What is that?
The first five books of the Bible.
First five books of the
Old Testament.
Old Testament, in other words, the Torah, are written by who?
Moses.
Moses. But some people allege that they weren't written by Moses. They were written by J, E, D, and P. They give letters to four authors based on how they do writing and phrases.
But they don't even have any clue who they are.
J is for Jehovah. Jehovah.
Oh.
And E is for Elohimist. Then there's the Deuteronomist, and then there's the one who does, like, the prophets, I think. And then they do all these mappings about which part of the Bible they think who wrote which. And, you know, it may be that Moses used a scribe. He was educated, and he was, you know, a prince in the Egyptian court, so of course he knew how to write. I mean, he was raised up in it, so there's no reason why he couldn't have wrote it, but it's easily he could have dictated it to someone else. But there's just debates about that, too. Anyway, so there's some conflict about that. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up is because in the beginning it says that there are 7 days for creation.
Right.
On the seventh day, God rested.
Right.
And it also says in Exodus, that God created the heavens and earth in 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
But then it comes in a little more contradicting spot where you could say, well, what day was the sun created on? It was the third day.
Mm-hmm.
So how long is the first and second day if there's no sun? So, you know, is it assuming that these are 24-hour periods? You know, what defines a day?
You right. Know?
So it's kind
of... What's always our debate?
It says there's a morning and then there's evening. And then that was the end of the first day, if you read Genesis. So how do you have a morning and an evening or whatever?
But also, you know, there's 7 days in a week now, so I think it meant 7 days.
Yeah. But then again, it's not necessarily that strict. And it's not to say that it couldn't be. People would have translated that back, and there's a couple monks and priests or whatever who calculated that the world began on October something in 4000 BC. On this literary date by counting the days backwards by how old people are.
Oh, really?
And they have it figured out to be the certain days when the world had began.
Hmm.
And some people wonder if some of the things in the Garden of Eden were more metaphorical or literal.
Right.
You know, I heard a good analogy is like, well, you know, let's say that you're a Swahili villager, or just someone who's never even seen a plane before, a 747 plane, you would describe it as like a flying elephant or something like that.
Oh, you're getting off topic.
Yeah, anyway, so evolution.
The whole point of looking at evolution is because they put such forth everything as fact, and a lot of this stuff is crazy. Like the guy I heard on Science Friday, an NPR thing the other day, discovered an intermediary fossil. That supposedly is this fish that was walking. It was supposedly the Darwin fish, if you've seen that on Cars, that they found. And then he starts talking about, oh, how exactly they found it. And then they're like, oh, we found a foot over here and a leg over here and this and that. So basically they just bought a bunch of different bones and put them together into a fossil. And they are claiming that it was the missing link between water to land.
Yeah, so my main point was, to wrap up what I was saying, is not that it has to be necessarily exactly literal, but more it's like explaining that this is important.
I know. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Yeah, that, you know, that the world was created by God and is ordered by Him, and evolution can exist. I mean, it's apparent in, like, microbes that change, that mutate, and, you know, viruses that change all the time, and the new things. But they're pretty much within the same species, and you can read all about that. That's old stuff you were saying. That
today, even, evolutionists don't even claim a species. Like, they don't claim the term species. Like, they don't because there's lots of anomalies that don't fit into species. So they say it's just a very loose thing, and everything's just in a constant state of evolution. So, just so you know, they don't claim that they're species anymore.
Yeah, I guess I'm a few years antiquated on the whole modern evolution arguments.
That was my whole reason to looking into it, because I feel like I've heard a few intelligent design talks lately, and they use practically word for word the same examples and the same story, and it's all Stanley Miller and this spotted moss, which is back from like the 1950s, which all comes like from Philip Johnson's book and a couple other people, Josh McDowell. So I just feel like their arguments are out of date, and we need to update them as Christians. That was my whole reason for looking into it.
Yeah.
So if you know of a source, send it to me, because I'm looking. A Christian source of intelligent design.
Yeah. So we're not like necessarily against evolution and say that God... It's absurd to say that God can't have evolution in the world. Who is in control of the world and the order? It's nothing to be afraid of evolution.
Right.
The fact that if species are evolving, if one species evolves to another species, it still doesn't prove the fact that God created everything. Or it doesn't say how things started either.
Right.
It just explains, you know, this led to this.
Entropy of the world.
Yeah.
Under control.
And, you know, it's just how the whole universe is. Just because things are expanding and moving, whatever, it doesn't necessarily mean there was a Big Bang or there wasn't a Big Bang or anything like that. You know, it fits either way in the model. You know, and let there be light could be a Big Bang. So, I mean, it is a rather loose interpretation, but the point is to say that God doesn't create in control of even the smallest protein in your DNA.
Right.
So we're not against evolution. It's against the idea that God did not create man.
Right.
And we tend to believe that Adam and Eve were created in an adult form and did not have a belly button.
Funny.
And that Adam had one less rib than Eve. But all men from then on had the same amount of ribs.
Let me poke you to find out.
Ow. What do you think?
You have two ribs. Better.
Yeah. So a lot of people talk about intelligent design all the time. It gets a lot of press. And the things about evolution that... The funny thing is they teach all this stuff in high school and you read these books and it's really not true at all.
Yeah, that's the funny
thing. I mean, it's all entertainment. And a lot of it is just based on what's popular at the time. And they treat it as if it's fact, because it's secular. And it's the most popular alternative to creationism. Because if you don't have evolution, what are you going to do? You can't admit that creationism is the best theory.
Right.
That would reply responsibility and acknowledging that Christianity is something to be reckoned with.
Yep. I think if just there's a bunch of people I don't want to be out of a job and want money from the government, from the National Science Foundation.
Oh, I think it's all about pride. That's why I wanted to talk about the .9999 thing.
Okay.
So. But that's kind of like our take on it. I like the Michael Behe, Darwin's Black Box, talks about irreducible complexity. That's a good book. We like Philip Johnson. He's a couple years old. His stuff. He's old
good.
Guy,
he
too.
He keeps up on it.
But that's like a good layman's book. Darwin on Trial, I think. If you've never even read any of it. To get started.
A lot of
people
talk
about ID
antiquated.
Now. There's a lot of court cases about schools that want to have ID in them, and then everyone's like, you're an idiot, and everyone who opposes them are like, you're an idiot, and truth isn't something you can decide by a democracy. Which moves us on to this mathematical argument. Did you understand
people
what
just
I was
need
talking
to,
about?
People just need to start understanding that everything that you're taught in schools is not right, and that 99% of it's probably crap.
Yeah. We should talk about the current event stuff, too. That's a good one.
What current event stuff?
How they tell you shouldn't be up on current events in high school? You need to be in the know, but then if you read Fox News or CNN and you realize it's all entertainment, they're giving us stories that we want to hear.
Right.
That's why there's a story about minors in the news every single day and about kidnapping and about
some suicide
bomber.
With their that's posing nude on the internet.
Yeah, some teacher with their 13-year-old student. It's always the same stories over and over, because that's what we want to see. But the unfortunate part of that is that because we want to see it, they play it, and because they play it, that encourages us, encourages people to do those things even more.
Right.
Which is the bad thing about wars, is you could say that maybe a lot of the Iraq war is because the news have put it up there so much that it's encouraged the U.S. government to step up that fight and do things like that. And a lot of wars have been encouraged by the media. So, I mean, it's not so, like, objective as you think. But it definitely is influential.
It is not fair and balanced.
Yeah. But it's not liberal either.
Yep.
So anyways, there's this website called dig.com. It has all these tech stories on it. And it's a little bit hokey, but, like, the way it works is anybody can submit a story, and then anybody can comment on it. So it's all user-driven. It's not moderated. I mean, it is moderated some, just for obscenity and things like that, but based on how many people dig it, if you like the story, you click dig, and it gives it a dig.
D-I-G-G.
Yeah, and if it has enough digs, it makes it to the main page, and you can see all the most popular stories and comment them. But unfortunately, the people who comment them tend to be kind of dumb. There's another story website called Slashdot.com, which is basically the original news sort, but that's totally moderated. Like, they choose what stories are going to go up there. So they say that you read Dig for quick news stories, but you read Slashdot for comments.
Oh, really?
And things. It's not as important to you because it's mostly tech things.
Yeah, I looked at it once. I wasn't very interested.
Plus, it's ugly.
It is ugly.
Dig is a lot prettier. But still. Anyway, so there's this article on here. This is the question. So, consider a fraction, or a decimal, 0.9999999, such that 9 repeats over infinity, otherwise known as 0.9 with a bar over it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Dot 9 with a bar over it, which means 9s are a reoccurring decimal. All right. Does that value equal 1?
Yes.
So, or no. You have to decide. And there was an article on Dig that said, does .999 equal 1? And then the caption was, I'm sorry to tell you, you all are idiots because it does equal 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, and then they have a link to a page that has a mathematical proof. And then, so, you would think that would go okay, and people would recognize the proof, and or they would do a simple search on Google and find out it's, you know, it equals 1. And it does equal 1 if you're angry about this. And find out that it really does. There's also Wikipedia articles on it that shows you, like, 5 or 6 different ways to prove that it does equal 1. I can even explain why, but you should look it up if you don't understand.
Yeah.
But anyways, the very first comment is like, you are an absolute effing moron if you think that equals 1. It does not equal 1. And then you can give it a plus or minus. And
do you give the comment a plus or minus?
You can give the comments plus or minus on there. And if they get, so they get modded down or up. But it's all user modding, so it's like if you agree with it, it mods up. If you disagree, if it mods down. But the majority of people on this article, surprisingly, thought that what?
It did not equal 1.
Yeah. Tracy, did you look at it very much?
I just read it a little proof you sent.
Yeah, so she didn't really look at it. But I spent like the whole day reading this just because it was so comical. Because people were coming up with these ideas. They're like, well, if .999 is less than 1, and then .99999 is less than 1, therefore, as long as I add a 9, it's always going to be less than 1. And then there were other ones that are all kinds of fantastic ones about adding the number, the fraction, and whatnot.
Mm-mm.
And nobody could get the idea of a limit. So
that's because no one does math anymore.
Yeah, well, So there was all these, like, different kinds of, like, explanations and proofs on how, obviously, 0.999 does not equal 1. And some of them were, like, you know, they're coming with very complicated formulas who really doesn't make sense, and they, you know, they don't follow the rules. And then and doesn't work. This isn't one of Corey's. Another one was they'd be like, well, I'm a mathematician, obviously, and it's an approximately 1, but it is not 1. Therefore, that's true. And then, when you could obviously tell they're not a mathematician. Mm-hmm. It's just totally BS. There was other ones that were interesting, too.
I always like to qualify myself online, too.
Yeah, and other ones were like, according to Euler, but they would spell it, you know, it's spelled Euler, E-U-L-E-R. It's pronounced Euler.
Yep.
According to Euler's formula, this is absolutely not true, because if it was, it would totally debunk every law in mathematics. They would say stuff like that.
That's funny.
And then one guy was like, giving these formulas about, like, you know, adding different numbers together, and they're like, and everyone would come up for a reason why it couldn't possibly equal 1. And then people would try to prove it to them. And one of the proofs was like, well, I challenge you to give me a number between 0.99999 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, then you prove it. And then someone's like, well, that would be 0.9995. It was just kind of funny. And then, you know.
This is why I was in the 99th percentile on tests.
You got it wrong.
I didn't
think about
you
it.
You didn't send me infinity. You just was like 0.999. You send that to me. You said, is that 1?
I know, you weren't even thinking about
it. I wasn't even paying attention to you.
Yeah. But, like, a simple proof is 1 divided by 3 is 0.333333. The decimal approximation. So if you add 0.3333 or 0.3 bar plus 0.3 bar plus 0.3 bar, it's the same thing as doing 1/3 plus 1/3 plus 1/3, which equals 1. Another one is like, well, 1 over 9 is 0.99, or 0.111, you know, 1 over 4, or I'm sorry, I'm screwing this up. 4 over 9 is 0.444, 5 over 9 is 0.555, 8 over 9 is 0.888, 9 over 9 is 0.99999, and 9 over 9 is the same thing as 1.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 equals 0.999. And yep. There's some other more complicated proofs where they get into ordered sets, and I did it with a limit. But I'm like, obviously no one is here said calculus. One guy was like, he couldn't prove that 0.99...
That's in high school still.
No, one guy couldn't prove that 0.999 equals 1, so he goes, you guys are effing idiots, I give up on all of you. And then there was one guy who was like, I can't believe they do this in the school. You guys, these teachers say idiots, that's why the thing is so bad. Because he was angry that it wasn't equal. And then some guy from Europe chimed in. So now you're starting to get into a fight. Okay. And he's like, what did he say? Something about...
He spent way too much time on this.
Oh, I know. I'm probably confusing everyone who's listening, but I really got a kick out of it. He goes, no, the reason why the school systems are so bad is because idiot parents like you don't understand math. And they cause problems for students. So why don't you just go sue someone or something? Go sue them or something.
Yeah, you send that to me. I have a question.
Yes.
Does dig.com delete all of its articles every day?
No.
Oh, so it's just a running thing.
Mm-hmm. The most popular articles are on the front page, but mm-hmm. It's constantly rolling. They have a website where you can click and you can see all the activity that's going on live.
Mm-hmm.
It scrolls every like comment and things. You can see which ones are most popular. It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it went on and on. So, eventually, like, so many people had disagreed with the fact that they had all marked this article as inaccurate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it was, like, disabled. So, by democracy, they had voted that the truth is wrong.
Big surprise.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah. There was one guy that was like, well, if it doesn't equal 1, then what does e to the pi times negative 1 equal? It's like, the answer is negative 1, but disprove that. He's like, it's the same reason.
I listened to a really interesting podcast today on the Veritas Forum. It's a Christian podcast, but it's talking about hypocrisy.
Oh, really?
And how we're all hypocrites. But anyway, I don't remember all of it and to get into it now. There's just lots of quotes about people saying how Jesus said all the stuff that Jesus said is really great and everything. They just wish they could find someone who actually practices it,
mm-hmm.
or find a real Christian. I don't know. There's all these famous quotes that I can't remember now. But anyway, it's interesting. Veritas. Also on learningoutloud.com podcast.
Well, I think the hypocrisy argument is kind of bunk anyways, because the whole point of Christianity is that no one can be good.
No, it's, no one can prove it. I mean, there's some truth to it, though.
Yeah, but no one can live to that creed, no matter what, to any creed or anything.
Well, that's the point of everyone being a hypocrite, but...
But the whole thing about Christianity is it's forgiving, and this forgiveness cycle that we forgive everyone else, and unless we forgive and let people take advantage of us... There can't be, like, healing, because vengeance doesn't go on.
Right.
And the thing about Christianity is it considers everyone as if they were like Jesus. And if we were to forgive other people and consider people that way, then society would be so much better off. And that's obviously the only solution to it, because revenge is a thing that goes on and on. I play this little game, it's called, you know, Kill the Terrorist. And you shoot the terrorist, because there's all these people walking around, you kill the guy who had the Arab garb on.
Yeah.
With a missile, and when you kill it, all the people kind of, like, fall down and weep around it, and then they turn from a civilian into an Arab. And then as you kill more and more terrorists, eventually you realize everyone's a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a moral point to it. You may be able to figure it out yourself. But is that, you know, considering people as if they were perfect, and even though they're not, is the whole basic fundamentally of being adopted like Christ. And why Christianity is the answer is true.
Yeah, I think the main point of the hypocrisy is if you're unrepentant, if you're not going to admit that you're sinful when you are.
There are hypocrite Christians who say they're Christians but really don't follow it at all, and they don't even acknowledge that they're not following it. I mean, I realize I screw up and do things wrong, but I know what it's right, and if you question me on it, then I can tell you that I screwed up and did it wrong. But there's Christians that, you know, don't admit that they don't care. They don't even try. But they say they're Christians. They used to go out and do street evangelism. You ask people if they're a Christian, they'll say yes. You ask them who Jesus is, and they'll say, who's Jesus? That's happened a lot of times.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so it's like people like that. But generally, I think it's an excuse not to believe. The whole reason I got into this whole .999 thing is, okay, so here we're faced with a truth that we don't like. And it doesn't make sense to us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like the fact that it equals 1, because it just doesn't make sense to us by what we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
So
just like evolution.
So we get really angry, or evolution. Okay?
Or non-evolution.
And one of the things we do is we come up with really complicated formulas so that we don't have to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if that doesn't work, then we blame the people who figured it out. And call them hypocrites, or just say they don't know, or just debunk them. And then we do things about, we put it to popular vote. And because so many people don't believe it's true, then, you know, therefore it doesn't have to be true. Right?
Right.
So these are all, like, tactics we use so we don't have to believe. And the hypocrisy thing is really pathetic. What was that verse in Luke 16 that we read? It was like, if the rich man who's in hell wants to go back to life to tell his brothers repent, and you know, the angel Gabriel, or Michael, I don't remember which, said that if they didn't believe the laws of the prophets and the things of Christ, then they won't believe you. So it's like, it's not about the truth, because people don't care about the truth. They want to hear what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with the news and the things, too. We don't want to hear the true news because it's boring to us, or it makes us angry because it's not what we believe.
But the truth will set you free.
If we would listen to it, but we won't.
Right.
And that's why it's so hard. I mean, I get frustrated because I love Predestination. I had a hard time figuring this one out, and I still don't have it all figured out. But it was angry for me because based on what I knew of the scriptures, it didn't make sense. But I didn't have a way to refute it. So I'd search the scriptures and I'd come up with all these things, and it was just basically, I was ultimately trying to find a way that I could still have control, faced with the truth that I wasn't in control.
Mm-hmm.
Although this is a huge topic, I'm not going to get into it. But the point is, you know, sometimes we have to be able to admit we're wrong and consider it, and maybe things would be better. You okay?
Yes. I just have an itch on my finger.
Yeah, I'm boring you too.
And topic, Final Destination.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Evolution.
We're okay in time.
No, I'm okay.
Well.
Oh, did you want to talk about this charismatic movement?
Yeah, we did promise that we were going to talk about that, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you talk about that? I've been talking for a while.
Alright, 1 second.
Popcorn.
Okay.
What did you read?
I was listening to John Piper today, which I do every day. And I brought up what I thought was a good point about how the charismatic movement might possibly dry up or lose its charisma that it has currently because it is based in fellowship and not based in theology, and doesn't put theology before fellowship. That was my point that I brought up to you earlier today.
Yeah.
And not to say that it's a bad movement, because it's brought a lot of people to Christ. So, I'm not saying that it's bad, but also not saying that it's going to last either, that it's going to be effective for very long.
Hmm.
Just like the parable of the sower and where you plant your seed at. You need to have deep roots that they have a basis. And also, he brought up the point of how Paul reached out to people, or how Paul did evangelism or ministry. He didn't play on fellowship first. He always wrote letters and put the theology basis down first before the fellowship happened. The fellowship naturally follows theology because it's part of it, but it's not the basis.
I'm not quite sure what the fellowship part is that's unique to the charismatic church that isn't in the other churches that he's talking about.
It's not that it's not... They both have fellowship. It's a matter of what the basis is.
I don't think that charismatic churches have a basis of fellowship that other churches don't have.
Are they based in theology?
I mean, your church we went to in Pella, they had a cookie thing afterwards.
Oh, I'm not saying... I'm not saying that there won't be fellowship in every Christian church, but I'm just saying that it's a matter of what comes first, or what the order is of what it's practiced. Are you rooted in fellowship, or are you rooted in theology? It's fine if fellowship branches out of the theology, but it's not the same if theology would branch out of fellowship.
Yeah, I don't see how the charismatic church is part
of
this, though.
You can talk to John Piper. I'm not saying the charismatic movement, I'll just say fellowship before theology. That's all I'll say. But he did tie it back to the charismatic church. And I'm not as up on my church lingo, so.
Okay, well, I would say what I got interested in is because it was saying that there's no scriptural teaching in the charismatic church because it's all the Holy Spirit telling you everything to say and do and think and go by.
Who told you that? That's what it is?
No, that's what I thought you meant.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't say that.
Because I was going to say that's not true at all, because I know
I didn't have any claims against them. I'm not saying that they're not. It's a matter of the order of how it was brought about and how it is growing. Is it growing based on theology and having the strong roots, or is it growing based on just fellowship and having the soft leaves that people float on?
So she's alluding to it being like the sprout that shoots up in the thin soil and then dies away quickly.
Right. That was mine. Piper didn't do that.
Well, you could say the same thing about the Reformed Church.
Why? It's based in theology.
Okay, can you sit up? I'm getting really hot.
I'm sorry. I'm angry at you.
Sweating. No, I'm just sweaty. Okay. It's hot in here.
I need to put the air conditioner on.
I know. You will, but... So you have the Charismatic Church, and you have the Reformed Church. By Reformed Church, I should say the Reformation, just to clarify, not to confuse. So you had the Catholic Church, and everybody split off and created the whole Protestant movement, which, you know, occupies maybe a third of Christians, and Catholics are about a third of Christians, and now Pentecostals make up the other third.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I think the Roman Catholics are the largest portion, and then Pentecostals are second largest, and then Protestants are third. That's non-Pentecostal Christians. And the first split off was from the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was founded by on Peter, the Rock, and then the first Pope was pretty much James, and then it went all the way up for a long time, eventually until about the 1500s, when the printing press was invented.
Yes.
And the printing press allowed people to have their own copy of the Bible, where the church was responsible for giving it to people because it cost 2 or 3 years' labor to make one Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of changed the rules when people could read it to themselves, and there was abuse in many churches because people told them what to think and what to do. It was for their own good because people weren't educated.
I think you're shooting off on a tangent.
No. So 50 years ago, there was a similar one because it became so structured, and the Protestants almost got to the point where they weren't, for a while, they weren't wearing any rings or anything in marriage because it was all Catholic rebellion. It became so much head knowledge. So it's either tradition or head knowledge.
I'm not saying head knowledge. I think theology and head knowledge are not the same thing.
So there became, 50 years ago, there was the Sousa Street revival, and L.A. became kind of the start of it. And suddenly there's this Pentecostal church, and it allows people to worship without really knowing deep scriptural things. I think you and me worship through knowledge and things because we're intelligent. But other people worship through music and things like that. And the good thing about the Pentecostal church is it frees people up to worship.
I'm not talking about worship either. I'm talking about fellowship. But go ahead.
Anyways, I don't see that fellowship makes any difference at all, because I think that applies to every single denomination.
It's a matter of where it's based on. Did it start from fellowship, or did it start from...
I don't really know of any, like, fellowship movement, though. I'm still confused on how this has to do with charismatic.
I don't know. You better write John Piper an email. But
you listen to him.
I understood his point, but he didn't go into... I think he assumed people knew what the charismatic movement was.
Yeah, but that's not the charismatic movement.
That's what he called it. What's charismatic based in them? Like, what's their theology?
Charisma is, like, moving and manifestation of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. Speaking in tongues, prophecy, you know, just general...
So the point is that they're really not based on a theology. Like, all churches, like Methodist, Lutheran, Baptist, whatever else there is out there, Episcopal, all are rooted in some sort of theology. But this charismatic movement... It's not rooted in theology. It's rooted more into this communion and fellowship and what's brought about from that in the Holy Spirit.
That's not true, because the Pentecostal movement is referring to the Pentecost.
Well, I didn't throw Pentecostal. I'm not saying then, Pentecostal and charismatic are the same thing.
Yeah, and then Paul also gives special teaching about speaking in tongues and ecclesiastical organization of the church with regards to such gifts of prophecy and speaking in tongues, which many of the Protestant churches say have stopped because of cessation.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong about that. I'm just saying Is that in itself theology?
I say yes.
Because is it a gospel-based theology?
I say yes because of the fruit that has come of it. I think it's amazing that a third of the Christians worldwide are now Pentecostal. And it may be dying down just because there was such a expansive growth. But you would say, if so many people came to Christ so quickly through this movement, and it doesn't contradict Scripture at all, but actually
did they holds come, it. But are you sure that they're fully saved?
Definitely.
How can you say? You don't know if anyone's saved.
Well, I'll give you that point, too. But it does say in the Bible that you can know people by their fruit.
And what fruit is it?
That if a Pentecostal church is spewing more believers...
But you can't save if it's more believers. I don't think they can say if believers is fruit.
I think that's what fruit is.
But you don't know if they're believers. I mean, look at the Mormons. Look at the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Well, you can tell by their actions and things that they contradict
the
Bible.
They have lots of fruit. And my friend also, who grew up in this...
That's not fruit.
Oh, my friend who was in this... University Christians. I can't remember. University Christian Fellowship or something. The cult. It's basically a cult. But there's lots of fruit. They go by the Bible, and they have lots of people, like, joining them, and they have lots of new believers and all this stuff, too. But it's not a real... It's a cult. So I don't think you can say new
believers. But the cult... isn't fruit, though. Fruit is
but
things
to them it
that
is.
Spread the gospel. But what they believe is contrary
but
to
I'm
the
saying
gospel,
if they don't
but the Pentecostals don't.
Let's say we go into a charismatic church, you ask them, what is the gospel? Do you think they're going to be able to explain it to you?
Yes.
Because where's their basis coming from?
The Assemblies of God Church is the biggest biggest denomination after Roman Catholic of Christians. You know that? And they're charismatic church.
Pentecostal
and charismatic are the same thing.
Maybe we don't have the right definition of things then.
Yeah, this doesn't sound right to me.
But we'll have to listen
so
to it.
So if you're listening and you understand this, please send us an email. Well, maybe we'll talk about this more later.
I need to look up more of what the charismatic movement is.
Like, when I was in, like, Assemblies of God, they were like, you can't wear shorts to church or we'll kick you out.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that that's...
And, you know, they are, like, very literal interpretation of the Scripture. And it was very good.
Well, maybe they aren't charismatic.
It's not like the Episcopal Church, which today elected a woman leader.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who advocates homosexuality and was one of the ones who got that gay priest to become a bishop.
Well, I don't advocate the Episcopal Church either.
That is a church, I would say, that has very little fruit.
And they're not destructive. They're not rooted in theology, because they are practicing wrong things.
Yeah.
I'll listen to it again and I'll have a better argument.
Yeah, so we're going to come back to this anyway. And address this later.
I understand the whole point of it, I just don't know which particular denomination I could tie to it, because I'm not going to tie all of them.
Alright, we're going to talk about them more later. But I was going to talk about X-Men, but it's getting kind of long.
Oh.
So... I really encourage you to go see X-Men 3. I don't think it's as good as the other two in some ways, but other ways I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I felt like the X-Men movie has had a very Christian aspect to it.
Undertone.
Yeah, just for the racism and the acceptance of people. And I wanted to mention it because we had talked about evolution earlier.
And X-Men is really Christian because it's a cross.
Yeah. Okay. So, like in the second one, there's a transporter that is a Roman Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and he prays, and he's a good
Night
example,
crawler.
And it's a lot about, like, accepting people even though they're different, and forgiving people when they make mistakes, and it's very good things. And the last one, I recommend you pause it here if you haven't seen X-Men 3, but... And thank you for visiting White's Haven of Bliss podcast at havenofbliss.com. But Jean Grey becomes this godlike character, and it just reminds me of, like, how God is in absolute control of the whole universe, including you know, people being mutated and evolving and things like that, that is so unstable, that, you know, the sun is this burning hell of fire, and everywhere else is like ice cold rocks or acid planets, yet you have this little Earth planet, which is in perfect equilibrium enough to survive. Different layers of atmosphere, you got electric magnetic shells around the Earth protecting against the sun. It's like so perfectly organized. The maintain life is still, it's still infuting. Even little bugs are fighting each other, and little ticks are crawling on Tracy. That just reminds me that how God is absolutely in control of the numbers of hair.
He's in control of those darn ticks on there, and they're going crazy.
So, all right. Well, I think that's enough for today. What do you think?
Yeah, we've talked a lot.
All right. Thanks for visiting whitetavenofbliss.com.
Come.
That's what Tracy has to say. We'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.